From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now! We're broadcasting live from Copenhagen. It's Climate Countdown.
El capitalismo es el peor enemigo de la humanidad.
Capitalism is the worst enemy of humanity.
El capitalismo, por tanto, el desarrollo irracional.
Capitalism, and I'm speaking about irrational development.
Políticas de industrialización ilimitada son los que destrozan el medio ambiente.
Policies of unlimited industrialization are what destroys the environment.
Bolivian President Evo Morales. He joins us today here in Copenhagen to talk about the UN climate talks, capitalism, climate debt, and much more. The UN summit is on the brink of collapse. The dispute between rich and poor countries on key issues remains unresolved. Civil society has largely been locked out. Today, we'll speak with the Greek Prime Minister, George Papandreou, and we'll hear from the President of the Maldives, Mohamed Nasheed. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman, broadcasting live from Copenhagen, where hopes are fading for a binding deal here at the climate summit, one day before the talks conclude. The Obama administration has been widely criticized for refusing to change its proposal to cut emissions by just 4% of 1990 levels. The European Union, by contrast, has offered to cut emissions by at least 20%. China, meanwhile, has also been faulted for reportedly trying to abandon a binding accord in favor of a political declaration. President Obama arrives in Copenhagen tomorrow on the summit's final day. A short while ago, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said the U.S. would consider establishing a $100 billion annual climate aid fund for poorer nations. Clinton said the proposal is contingent on the Copenhagen talks resulting in a comprehensive deal.
And today, I'd like to announce that in the context of a strong accord in which all major economies stand behind meaningful mitigation actions and provide full transparency as to their implementation, the United States is prepared to work with other countries toward a goal of jointly mobilizing $100 billion a year by 2020. To address the climate change needs of developing countries.
The U.S. proposal has already come under criticism as insufficient. Eric Pica of the group Friends of the Earth said, quote, "This looks like a shell game. The amount falls far short of what the United Nations says is needed, condemning the poorest to languish in poverty while the world suffers from climate chaos. In addition, loans and private investments must not substitute for public money, and it is unclear how much of this package is public," he said. Meanwhile, the crackdown on voices for climate justice continue inside and outside the summit. Scores of delegates from NGOs and civil society groups have been refused entry for a second consecutive day. Late last night, a group of youth staged a sit-in here at the Bella Center to protest their exclusion.
We'll stay here until there's a fair, ambitious, and legally binding agreement. And we are reading out the names of 11 million people who are standing behind us, and you have the same demands. And the action in itself is also a protest against exclusion of civil society when heads of states arrive and actually decide upon what's going to be the agreement, and then civil society is going to be excluded, and that's not acceptable.
The UN has reportedly issued entry permits to just 300 of the thousands of accredited civil society delegates. Earlier today, Greenpeace Executive Director Kumi Naidu criticized the restrictions.
And the questions of access, the questions of transparency and so on, while it started off quite well, it is in a very slippery downward slide at the moment. I think it is extremely unfortunate, firstly, that the civil society participation year has been shrunk to an absolute bare minimum.
Crackdown follows yesterday's arrest of over 230 people involved in the Reclaim Power People's Assembly outside the summit. You can go to our website at democracynow.org for our coverage of the protest from Wednesday's broadcast. The Ethiopian government is coming under criticism from African climate justice advocates over a joint proposal with France. The plan endorses Western calls for capping temperature increases at 2 degrees Celsius, shunning African calls for 1.5 degrees at the most. African delegates have warned a 2-degree cap is untenable for Africa's survival. Mathika Mwenda of Pan-African Climate Justice Alliance said, quote, "The science is clear. 2 degrees is 3.5 degrees in Africa. This is death to millions of Africans." Climate justice activists say President Obama may have pressured the Ethiopian Prime Minister, Meles Zenawi. This week, the White House said Obama had phoned Zenawi and praised him for taking, quote, a leadership role. On the sidelines of the summit, a group of environmental groups have bestowed the mock Angry Mermaid Award to highlight corporations trying to thwart efforts against global warming. The biotech giant Monsanto finished in first place, followed by the oil giant Royal Dutch Shell and the oil lobby American Petroleum Institute. Paul de Klerk of Friends of the Earth International said richer nations are putting corporate profits above global survival.
The UN climate negotiations are moving further and further away from commitments from rich countries to reduce their emissions at home. We see that the solutions pushed for are mainly instruments that will generate big profits for companies, while most of these instruments do not result in reduction of greenhouse gas emissions, and some of them are even destroying the environment and local communities' rights.
We'll have more from Copenhagen after headlines. On Capitol Hill, independent Senator Bernie Sanders has withdrawn a measure for single-payer health care after a Republican effort to thwart its consideration. On Wednesday, Sanders tried to introduce his proposal for a Medicare for All health system as an amendment to the Senate health care reform bill. But before debate could begin, Republican Senator Tom Coburn insisted the 767-page measure be read in its entirety. Sanders withdrew the amendment after nearly 3 hours, but vowed not to give up the fight for single payer.
The day will come, although I recognize it is not today, when the United States Congress will have the courage to stand up to the private insurance companies and the drug companies and the medical equipment suppliers and all of those who profit and make billions of dollars every single year off of human sickness. And on that day, when it comes, and it will come, the United States Congress will finally proclaim that health care is a right of all people and not just a privilege.
Sanders, meanwhile, has also announced he opposes the Senate health care bill in its current form. He is the first progressive senator to withdraw support for the bill since it was revised to meet the demands of independent Senator Joseph Lieberman. On Sunday, Lieberman announced he would oppose the bill unless Democrats abandon both the proposal to expand Medicare eligibility as well as any type of public option. In other news from Washington, the House has approved a new spending bill, including $128 billion for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Democrats say the amount does not factor in the additional funds that'll be needed for President Obama's recent orders to deploy over 30,000 more troops. A new congressional study, meanwhile, says the escalation of the Afghan war will require tens of thousands of new contractors. The Congressional Research Service says it expects the Obama administration to send between 26,000 and 56,000 contractors, along with the additional troops. A House Oversight Subcommittee, meanwhile, has opened a probe into allegations Pentagon contractors have paid Afghan insurgent groups to protect U.S. supply routes from attack. A recent report in The Nation magazine said 10% of the Pentagon's logistics contracts consist of payments to the Taliban. In other Afghan war news, the Obama administration is refusing to acknowledge a Taliban offer to provide legal guarantees Afghanistan would not be used to stage attacks on other nations. A Taliban statement earlier this month suggested it would offer the unspecified guarantees in return for the withdrawal of foreign troops. The Interpress Service news agency reports the White House silence could signify it hasn't ruled out future negotiations. The New York Times is reporting an influential American diplomat working for the United Nations mission in Afghanistan tried to enlist the White House in a plan to replace Afghan President Hamid Karzai. The diplomat, Peter Galbraith, made headlines in September after he was fired from his position as the second top UN official in Afghanistan. Galbraith said his superior, Norwegian diplomat Kai Eide, was covering up widespread electoral fraud in Karzai's re-election. But Eide now says Galbraith was fired after proposing to replace Karzai with a more Western-friendly figure. The U.S. Embassy in Kabul has also confirmed Galbraith presented the plan, but that it was rejected. Although Karzai has long been linked to corruption and fraud, U.S. scrutiny greatly increased after Karzai began criticizing deadly U.S. airstrikes and discussing a timetable for withdrawing foreign troops. Galbraith has also come under recent scrutiny after it was revealed he stands to reap $100 million windfall from oil reforms he helped push through as an advisor to the Iraqi Kurdish government. Galbraith was working for a Norwegian oil company at the same time as he took part in talks on key oil measures in Iraq's constitution. The Western Sahara independence activist Aminatou Haidar has been hospitalized and placed in intensive care on the 32nd day of a hunger strike over her banishment from her homeland in the Western Sahara. Haidar began her hunger strike after Moroccan officials denied her entry into the Western Sahara. Morocco has demanded Haidar recognize Moroccan sovereignty over her Western Sahara and apologize to the Moroccan king before she can return. Haidar is receiving palliative care, but is still continuing her hunger strike. She's urged President Obama to pressure Morocco to allow her return. In Honduras, a prominent gay rights and anti-coup activist has been killed in a targeted attack. Walter Troches was shot Sunday as he walked in Tegucigalpa. He was rushed to the hospital where he died of his wounds. In a statement, the anti-coup National Resistance Front blamed coup regime-backed paramilitary that have targeted scores of supporters of the ousted president, Manuel Zelaya. The Department of Homeland Security in the United States has acknowledged several new cases of improperly gathering information on U.S. citizens and residents. On Wednesday, the Justice Department released documents showing Homeland Security officials distributed a report on the Nation of Islam to hundreds of law enforcement officials nationwide in 2007. The report was later withdrawn after a review found the analysis should never have been written because there was no evidence tying the group to acts or advocacy of violence. In another case, DHS officials circulated a, quote, terrorism watch list report at a Muslim conference in Georgia, despite no evidence linking the gathering or its speakers to terrorist activity. And a new study from a progressive British think tank says low-income workers, such as hospital cleaners, have a far higher economic value to society than bankers. The New Economics Foundation says bankers take away 7 British pounds for every 1 pound they earn. By contrast, hospital cleaners create 10 pounds of economic value for every pound they earn. The study's author says the findings suggest pay structures should reward jobs that create societal benefit, not profit. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. This is Climate Countdown.
We believe in the right of people to protest or to dissent, and we just can't—I can't personally understand where we are kept out of the conference.
The debate between the NGO, the poor people, and the governments is no more possible at 2 days at the end of this meeting.
When I say climate, you say justice. Climate!
Justice!
Climate!
Justice! These pepper sprayed me. I was shouting, we are peaceful, and they pepper sprayed me.
The U.S. has been the major obstructionist force in climate change from the day the crisis began.
El presupuesto de Estados Unidos es 687
billion of the United States is $687 billion for defense. And they went out for climate change to save life, to save humanity. They only put up $10 billion. This is shameful.
This is Climate Countdown. It's Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting from inside the Bella Center. It's just one day before the COP15 UN Climate Summit comes to a close. The summit has been described as the biggest gathering on climate change in history. And now, 10 days after it started, are the talks on the brink of collapse. The dispute between rich and poor countries, between the global north and global south on key issues, including greenhouse gas emissions and climate debt, remain unresolved. World leaders from more than 110 countries have begun arriving at the summit and are delivering their addresses to the main plenary as we speak. As for civil society, the only thing worse than the endless lines of thousands of people trying to get into the Bella Center are no lines, because civil society has largely been locked out. Well, just before we went to air today, I interviewed Evo Morales, Bolivia's first indigenous president. He was reelected in a landslide victory earlier this month. On Wednesday, Evo Morales called on world leaders to hold temperature increases over the next century to just 1 degree Celsius, the most ambitious proposal so far by any head of state. Morales also called on the United States and other wealthy nations to pay an ecological debt to Bolivia and other developing nations. President Morales, welcome to Democracy Now!
Bienvenidos a Democracia Ahora.
Muchas gracias por la invitación nuevamente.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
You spoke yesterday here at the Bella Center
en el Centro Bella.
And said, we cannot end global warming without ending capitalism. What did you mean?
Con el capitalismo. ¿Qué quiso decir con esto?
El capitalismo es el peor enemigo de la humanidad.
Capitalism is the worst enemy of humanity.
El capitalismo, por tanto, el desarrollo irracional.
Capitalism, and I'm speaking about irrational development.
Políticas de industrialización ilimitada son los que destrozan el medio ambiente.
Policies of unlimited industrialization are what destroys the environment.
Ese desarrollo industrial irracional es el capitalismo.
And that irrational industrialization is capitalism.
Por tanto, mientras no se revisan esas políticas, es imposible resolver el tema de la vida y la humanidad.
So as long as we don't review or revise those policies, it's impossible to attend to humanity and life.
How would you do that? How would you end capitalism?
¿Cómo terminaría usted con el capitalismo? ¿Cómo se hace eso?
Es cambiando políticas económicas.
It's changing economic policies.
Es acabando con el lujo.
Ending luxury.
El consumismo.
Consumerism.
Es, es el vivir, es el acabando con el vivir mejor.
It's ending the struggle to, or this searching for living better.
Vivir mejor.
Living better.
Es explotar al ser humano.
Is to exploit.
Saquea los recursos naturales.
Human beings, it's plundering natural resources.
Es egoísmo, es individualismo.
It's egoism and individualism.
Por tanto, en esas políticas del capitalismo no hay solidaridad.
Therefore, in those policies of capitalism, there is no solidarity or complementarity.
No hay reciprocidad.
There's no reciprocity.
Por tanto, es importante pensar en otra forma de vida.
So that's why we're trying to think about other ways of living
en
lives.
Vivir bien.
In living well, not living better.
No vivir mejor.
Not living better.
Vivir mejor a costa del otro.
Living better is always at someone else's
vivir
expense.
Vivir mejor a costa de la destrucción del medio ambiente.
Living better is at the expense of destroying the environment.
President Morales, what are you calling here for here at the UN Climate Summit?
¿Qué está demandando usted, señor presidente, aquí en la cumbre sobre el cambio climático?
La defensa del derecho de la madre tierra.
Defense of the rights of Mother Earth.
La tierra es nuestra vida.
The earth is our life.
La naturaleza es nuestra casa, nuestro hogar.
Nature is our home, our house.
Felizmente, las Naciones Unidas declaran el Día Internacional de la Madre Tierra.
Happily, the United Nations have declared a Mother Earth Day.
Si se reconoce la tierra como madre, a la madre no se alquila, a la madre no se vende.
If the mother is recognized as Mother Earth, it's something that can't be sold, it's something that can't be...
A la madre no se viola.
It can't be violated.
La madre es algo sagrado.
Something sacred.
Esa es la naturaleza, es el planeta Tierra.
This is nature, this is planet Earth.
Y por eso vengo a defender el derecho de la madre Tierra.
And that's why I've come here to defend the rights of Mother Earth, to defend the rights of life.
To defender la humanidad.
To defend humanity.
Que es salvando la madre Tierra.
And saving Mother Earth.
What does climate debt mean, President Morales?
¿Qué significa deuda climática?
Bueno, después de la destrucción de la madre tierra,
after this destruction of Mother Earth,
hay que reconocer el derecho de la madre tierra.
It's important to recognize the rights of Mother Earth.
Es el mejor reconocimiento mediante una deuda climática.
And the best way to recognize this is by paying a climate debt.
Segundo.
Second.
Es importante de los daños causados.
It's important to recognize the damages that have been done.
Se atienda a la gente afectada.
And attend to the people who have been affected by climate change.
Esa gente quedará sin islas, por ejemplo.
People who will lose their island homes,
esa
for example.
Esa gente, por ejemplo, quedará sin sin agua.
People who will remain without water.
Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State, said today, "We can't look back; we have to look forward."
La secretaria de Estado, la canciller de Obama, Hillary Clinton, dijo hoy día, "No podemos mirar hacia atrás; tenemos que mirar hacia adelante."
Mirar hacia adelante es revisar todo el capitalismo.
Looking forward means that we have to review everything that capitalism has done.
No solamente se puede resolver con la plata.
These are things that cannot just be solved with money.
Resolver la vida y a la humanidad.
We have to resolve problems of life and humanity.
Es resolver el problema del planeta Tierra.
And that's the problem that planet Earth faces today.
Y es acabando con el capitalismo.
And this means ending capitalism.
The Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, also said today that $100 billion would be promised if a deal were arrived at, not just by the United States per year, but in a public-private partnership with a number of countries around the world, but only if a deal is arrived at. She would not say what the U.S. would contribute to this. What do you say about the U.S. spending on the issue of global warming versus, well, you talked yesterday about war?
La secretaria de Estado ofreció 100 mil millones de dólares, no dijo cuál es la contribución de Estados Unidos en caso de que se llegara a un acuerdo entre todos. ¿Qué opina usted, qué dice usted acerca de estos gastos para el cambio climático en relación a lo que dijo el día de ayer, por ejemplo, los gastos de la guerra?
Que mejor pueden destinar todos los gastos de la guerra.
The best thing would be that all war spending be directed.
Estados Unidos, en vez de estar gastando las tropas en Irak,
instead of spending on troops in Iraq, in Afghanistan,
o las bases militares en Latinoamérica,
or the military bases in Latin America,
esa plata debería ir para resarcir los daños causados por Estados Unidos.
This money would be better directed to attending to the damages that were created by the United States.
Eso, por supuesto, no son 100 mil millones de dólares.
And of course, this isn't just $100 billion.
Por lo menos deben ser trillones y trillones de dólares.
This is probably trillions and trillions of dollars.
¿Cómo vamos a gastar plata para matar y no para salvar vidas?
Money to kill and not save lives?
Hay que gastar plata para salvar vidas y no para matar vidas.
We have to spend money to save lives, not to kill.
Es el capital. Esas son nuestras diferencias con el capitalismo.
These are our differences with capitalism.
You called the war in Afghanistan terrorist. Are you saying President Obama is a terrorist?
Usted calificó la guerra en Afganistán como terrorista. ¿Usted está diciendo que Obama es un terrorista?
Quienes mandan tropas para matar fuera de su país es terrorismo.
People who send their troops to kill outside their country, that's terror.
No solamente terroristas de civil, también terroristas uniformados.
There's not only civil terrorists dressed as civilians, they can also be dressed
peor
in military uniforms.
Financiados con la plata de sus pueblos.
Worse still if they're financed with the money from peoples,
por supuesto,
from taxes.
Cada país tiene derecho a defenderse.
Of course, every country has the right to defend itself.
Si cualquier país tiene derecho a defenderse.
Every country can defend itself.
Pero invadir a otro país armado, uniformado,
but invading another country with uniformed people,
de Estado.
That's state terrorism.
Y además de eso, sentar las bases militares en Latinoamérica.
Moreover, to establish military bases in Latin America.
Con fines netamente de control político.
With the objective of political control.
Y donde hay bases militares y donde hay imperio,
and where there are military bases and empire,
no se respeta la democracia.
That's not respect for democracy.
No hay paz con justicia social.
There is no peace, social peace.
No hay desarrollo para ese país.
There's no development for those countries.
Y tampoco hay integración de esas regiones.
Nor integration in those regions.
Esa es la vivencia de Sudamérica y de Latinoamérica. La vivencia.
But this is what we've lived in South America and Latin America.
What is your message to President Obama at these climate talks?
¿Cuál es su mensaje para el presidente Obama en estos en esta convención?
Mira, después de escuchar su intervención en la cumbre de jefes de Estado de América.
After listening to his speech at the Heads of State Summit of the Americas.
Tenía mucha esperanza que podía ser un aliado para resolver temas de pobreza, temas de igualdad.
We were very hopeful that he would be an ally in addressing poverty.
Ahora, ya no tengo ninguna esperanza, sino es toda una decepción.
Now I'm not so hopeful, rather we're disappointed.
Si algo ha cambiado en Estados Unidos, solo es el color del presidente.
If something has changed in the United States, it's the color of the president.
A mí me acusa de que con resoluciones administrativas cierro sindicatos, elimino sindicatos de trabajadores.
Como con el...
Con resoluciones administrativas.
So I've been called upon through administrative resolutions to close unions.
Or elimino sindicatos, acabo
sindicatos. To eliminate unions.
Cuando lo que hago es todo lo contrario.
When I'm doing exactly the opposite.
Construcción de sedes sindicales, compra de sedes sindicales, dotar carros a los dirigentes sindicales, a la organización.
I apologize. He's, entonces le han acusado de suprimir sindicatos.
Pero eso está en el informe para usted conoce eso, está en el informe para que no accedamos a la TVA.
Okay. In the report that was done regarding access to trade preferences under the 18th PDA program, it was charged that the Bolivian government has been involved in suppressing unions when, in fact, quite the contrary. The government's been very active in providing infrastructure and support to unions through improving the centers where unions meet, etc.
Mira, ni siquiera el presidente Butch ha observado artículos de la Constitución Política del Estado Boliviano. Mientras en su administración de Obama, observa los nuevos artículos de la Constitución Política del Estado Boliviano referentes al tema de los petróleo, de los del gas.
Even President Bush did not make any observations about the new clauses in the Constitution of Bolivia, whereas under the new administration there have been observations and comments made about the new Constitution that's been drafted, in particular in relation to the management of the gas and oil sectors.
Es una abierta intromisión política de Obama hacia Bolivia.
This is a clear involvement in Bolivian internal affairs by the Obama administration.
En el fondo está pidiendo que cambiemos la constitución. Ni siquiera eso hizo Bush.
At the end of the day, it seems that they're asking us to change the constitution. This is something that not even Bush did.
Solo interpretando eso, Obama parece peor que Bush.
If we just look at this, this is, makes Obama seem look worse than Bush.
Ahí están los documentos.
And the documents are there.
I know you have to leave. My last question is, you've called for a climate tribunal. What do you mean?
Usted ha llamado, ha convocado a un tribunal climático, de justicia climática. ¿A qué se refiere?
Quienes hacen daño con el medio ambiente, quienes destrozan el planeta Tierra, tienen que ser juzgados.
Those who do damage to planet Earth and those who do damage need to be judged.
Quienes no cumplen con el tratado de Kyoto tienen que ser juzgados.
Those who do not fulfill the terms of the Kyoto Protocol should also be judged.
Para eso hay que organizar el tribunal de justicia climática.
And for those ends, we have to organize a tribunal for climate justice.
En las Naciones Unidas.
In the United Nations.
And 1 degree Celsius?
1 grado Celsius es la meta.
Esa es nuestra propuesta.
That's our proposal.
Do you think it could be achieved?
¿Usted cree que es factible?
Sí.
Yes.
¿Por qué no? Si hay compromiso con la humanidad.
If, yes. Otherwise, it would be a lack of commitment to humanity.
Do you think there will be a deal that comes out of Copenhagen?
¿Usted cree que va a haber un acuerdo aquí en Copenhagen?
Dudo.
I doubt it.
Estamos desarrollando otra nueva propuesta para mi intervención.
We're developing other proposals for my intervention.
Do you think it's catastrophic that there's no deal?
¿Usted considera que es catastrófico que no llegue a un acuerdo?
Una pérdida de tiempo.
No, it's a waste of time.
Si los jefes de Estado no pueden ponerse de acuerdo, ¿por qué no los pueblos no deciden?
If the leaders of countries cannot arrive at an agreement, why don't the peoples then decide together?
We will leave it there. I thank you very much, President Morales.
Muchas gracias.
The Bolivian President, Evo Morales, speaking to us here in Copenhagen. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. It's Climate Countdown. You can go to our website at democracynow.org to read the transcript of what President Morales had to say and also to see or hear the video podcast. Stay with us. We'll be hearing from the president of the Maldives and a delegate from Tuvalu. MIA, pull up the people. Here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report, I'm Amy Goodman, broadcasting live from Copenhagen. The president of the Maldives, Mohamed Nasheed, has been one of the most outspoken leaders to call attention to the dire consequences of climate change. 80% of the Maldives lies 3 feet or less above sea level. The predicted rise in sea level caused by global warming could wipe the country off the map. President Nasheed addressed the UN Climate Summit on Wednesday.
Developed countries created the climate crisis. Developing countries must not turn into a calamity. Therefore, I invite the leaders of big developing countries to recognize the responsibilities. I urge them to come forward at Copenhagen with quantifiable and verifiable actions to reduce emissions 30% below business as usual by 2020. Let me be plain. We urgently need to move forward, giving us intensity targets that are close to business as usual is not acceptable at this stage. Ladies and gentlemen, I believe that you should not ask others to do something you are not prepared to do yourself. The Maldives has pledged to become carbon neutral by 2020. And I have been hugely encouraged by the steps already taken by least developed countries and small island states to begin getting their economies green. At the recent Climate of Vulnerable Forum in Male, 11 states pledged to raise their ambitions in leading the world towards carbon neutrality. This is an enormous opportunity to reduce future emissions before fossil fuel infrastructure is built. But it cannot be done without the financial support from rich countries. I say to the industrialized world, you have the finances and much of the technology. Please help us go green. When we say this, please bear in mind that climate change negotiations have nothing at all to do with money. Maldives is a very small state. We have never received aid from European Union countries. Whatever we have been able to do, we have been able to do with our friends and neighbors, and we have been able to fend for ourselves. Climate change negotiations have, for me and for our country, everything to do with our grandchildren. I have 2 daughters. I want to see grandchildren. If we continue business as usual, we will not be able to see our grandchildren. To assume that climate change has anything to do with money, in my mind, is the height of arrogance. I am also encouraged by regional climate initiatives. in places like California and Quebec, where true leadership is being shown outside the realm of the nation state, their standards, their ambitions are much, much higher than the center. Climate change, I do understand, is an issue that transcends nationality, that transcends the nation state. And what we have in offer from the centers, from heads of states, falls far shorter than what we are seeing from sub-regions or from provinces and from states. Ladies and gentlemen, Kyoto divided the world. It divided us between rich and poor, developed and developing, NX1 and NX2. Our task now is to unite the world behind the shared vision of low carbon growth. The Maldives is trying to lead the way. I call upon every country in this room to join us, not just for the sake of the Maldives, but for the sake of the entire planet. If we are not able to seize this opportunity, and if we are not able to come to an understanding during the course of next 48 hours, I'm afraid we might very well be doomed. I hope that that is not what we are contemplating. Thank you very much.
The President of the Maldives, Mohamed Nasheed, speaking here in Copenhagen, addressing the UN Climate Summit on Wednesday. Yes, Mohamed Nasheed, the President, held an underwater news conference of his entire cabinet a few weeks ago. Everyone was there except for a few members who didn't know how to scuba dive. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. It's Climate Countdown. At a news conference earlier today, the Prime Minister of the island nation of Tuvalu issued an urgent call to ensure that global temperatures do not rise by 1.5 degrees Celsius. Prime Minister Yalemia also highlighted the immense pressure that small island states are coming under to accept a weak deal. He said, quote, "Under the last few days, we have seen considerable pressure to accept a deal based around 2 degrees limit. We have not yielded to this pressure because our future is not negotiable." He highlighted pressure from Australia in particular. For more, I'm joined now by the negotiator for Tuvalu, Tukai Kitala. We welcome you to Democracy Now! You've just come out of that news conference. Can you talk about, first, what does global warming mean for your country, and locate it for our listeners and viewers in the United States and around the world who may not have even heard of Tuvalu?
Global warming in Tuvalu, it's really an issue at when we look at things that are happening right now in Tuvalu in regards to sea level rise and also really high tides. We experience high tides during the months of February and March. We have been living with a lot of doubts that the future looks really, really doubtful, the future of Tuvalu. And the Prime Minister actually really stressed out that we are not here in Copenhagen to strike a deal that will jeopardize our survival. But it seems that whatever that has been happening around the corridors or behind the scenes has created a lot of unease. That now we question our survival. Will Copenhagen come up with a real deal? Will Copenhagen provide assurance that Tuvalu will have a good future? We might be talking about looking, we might be looking at things at the moment, you know, at happening at the moment. The question, the big question is always put forward by Tuvaluans, is what is going to happen in the future. We're worried about our next generation or our future generations. The issue here is that whether our kids will ever enjoy the beautiful sands and the millions of corals that we have.
How large is the population of Tuvalu?
Tuvalu, it's just over 10,000 people in total. And our land is so narrow, this land, strips of land that they goes runs long as up to 5 to 6 kilometers long. And it gets to about a kilometer wide. That's the widest point of the island. But it gets really narrow at some point. That go up to only 5 meters. That's how narrow Tuvalu looks like.
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton just arrived here and held a news conference, is saying that, though being somewhat vague about it, countries are getting in the way of a deal, that the U.S. is laying something on the table, $100 billion to begin in 2020 from the U.S. and other countries. When asked by a Japanese journalist how much would the U.S. commit, she wasn't clear. But only if a deal is arrived at by tomorrow, otherwise it's off the table. Finally, your message to the U.S. government on what you want to see happen here.
Well, our message was clear, which was relayed by our Prime Minister. We want a 1.5 degrees, not more than 1.5.
That's 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit for people in the United States.
Okay. Now, the deal that the U.S. would like to see, I think what they really want to see is like they would like countries like Tuvalu, small island states and least developed countries, to strike a deal on a 2 degree, which we don't want.
What would it mean?
It means a lot to us in Tuvalu. Even at the 1.5, it is really critical for us. If we go beyond 1.5, it's just a matter of life and death for us. And putting money on the table will not solve anything, will not guarantee our survival. That's not a question.
Tauke Kitala, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Tuvalu delegate, climate delegate here in Copenhagen. As we end this segment with a young woman I met the other night, she was one of the youth delegates here. She was from another small island nation. She was from the Solomon Islands, had traveled for many, many hours to get to Copenhagen. And she, like many of the youth, were ultimately being kicked out of the Bella Center.
My name is Meilin Sese, and I'm from Solomon Islands. I'm 23, and I am with Pacific Survival Project Pacific Survival. It is a theme that we are here to raise our voices on survival, on Pacific survivals. And I'm here in COP15 because many people don't believe about climate change, but I'm here in person to tell people, tell the world leaders, that climate change is definitely, absolutely a real issue in my place. Climate change has been visual in my place. We have shorelines washed. We have our lands being affected by climate change. It affects our food crops, by the heat of the sun and unpredictable weather. And we also have increasing sea level rise that it causes losing of our island. And it is a big issue when it comes to relocation, when it comes to economy, when it comes to adaptation to another place. It is a problem to us. So I'm here. I'm here to express and to show to the world how far I came is how deep my concern is about climate. And my only hope is if the world leaders could show their kindness, the legitimate kindness to youths, to show the concern to youths like me, and count my coming to this place that far and accept to sign this deal, make it legally signed so that it would be a hope. And to me, it would be a greatest souvenir I ever have in my life, because it's my future. And it is a hope that I would take with me all my life. And it would be a hope for my children and my children's children. With that, thank you very much.
This is Climate Countdown, Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. We'll be back in a minute.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials, because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run, or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on the court from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised.
Gil Scott-Heron, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. It's Climate Countdown. We're broadcasting live from Copenhagen. I'm Amy Goodman. And we're joined right now by two journalists who've been covering very closely what's happening here at the UN Climate Summit. We're joined by Jade Lindegaard, who works for Mediapart, which is a media website. And Naomi Klein is back with us, who has been covering this Climate Summit extensively, also speaking at the Climate Forum across town and other civil society events. She is blogging for The Nation magazine at thenation.com and author of a number of books, including The Shock Doctrine. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Jade Lindegaard, you have some breaking information about documents you've gotten here at the UN Climate Summit.
Yeah, a very interesting leak today from the UNFCCC Secretariat, showing that the targets of reduction emissions that countries now, today, are putting on the table, these targets do not allow to stay below 2 degree rise in temperature. And they even say that it could lead us to a rise of 3 degree in temperature, which is, as we know, catastrophic if that ever happens.
Who is writing this?
This is the UNFCCC. It's not WWF, it's not Greenpeace, it's not Front of the Earth, it's the Secretariat. And it's an internal note they're having, and they have not yet published, and which is a basis of work for the current negotiations.
How did you get it?
It's a leak.
Naomi Klein, yeah. The significance of this.
Well, sorry, I have to apologize for my voice. Amy, you guys made me come on. But it's a metaphor, of course, because everybody's complaining about how they've lost their voice in these proceedings. No, this is so significant, because what this is the UN itself saying that if all of these countries go off and do what it is that they're promising to do, and let's remember this is the U.S. model, that rather than having targets that they must meet, there'll be so-called national plans, so every country comes up with their own targets, and then they mash them together. So they've done the math, and they're saying, if the U.S. does what it's saying it's going to do, if the EU does what it's going to do, then altogether, the temperatures will increase by 3 degrees, which is catastrophic, because the target that they have set is 2 degrees, but even that, we've heard from Africa, would be a disaster.
It's interesting because if it's these figures that the UN is working on now, they are based on what the pledges of countries. So it's already based on what countries say they want to do. It's not a business as usual. It's already taken into account the effort that these countries have said they're willing to comply to. And the truth is, it's not enough at all. It's not enough. So in a way, these all negotiations and these disagreements these past few days around the two degree rise, they look like something, you know, it's a bit like theater. Because in the end, it doesn't really matter for the people. If it's 3 degrees, it's a nightmare for Africa and IOCs.
And just for those who aren't following these negotiations that closely, the UNFCCC stands for the United Nations Framework for Climate Change Convention. It's the UN Climate Change Conference that's taking place here in Copenhagen. I wanted to play a clip of Hillary Clinton's news conference just a few minutes ago. She was just here in the room outside where we're broadcasting from in the Bella Center, had just arrived. People were asking her, you know, is in fact President Obama coming? We're hearing rumors that he isn't. But this was the announcement she said she had come to deliver.
And today I'd like to announce that in the context of a strong accord in which all major economies stand behind meaningful mitigation actions and provide full transparency as to their implementation, the United States is prepared to work with other countries toward a goal of jointly mobilizing $100 billion a year by 2020 to address the climate change needs of developing countries. We expect this funding will come from a wide variety of sources, public and private, bilateral and multilateral, including alternative sources of finance. This will include a significant focus on forestry and adaptation, particularly, again, I repeat, for the poorest and most vulnerable among us.
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton just arrived here in Copenhagen, dealing with the questions of will these talks collapse and making her announcement about what the U.S. is putting on the table. Naomi Klein, your response.
Well, it was an extraordinary press conference because it was really like just the most naked form of blackmail. She put this figure on the table. She said the U.S. will contribute to a $100 billion fund, but only if the terms of their deal are agreed to by all of the countries here. So it was agree to our terms, and those terms are very clear. They're kill the Kyoto Protocol instead of legally binding emissions, transparency, which I don't even know what that means, no overall target, but these national plans. And as Jad has just outlined, those national plans do not meet the crisis. So it's a horrible choice that the United States has put before the world, except a completely unacceptable agreement that will not solve the climate crisis or receive no money to deal with the effects of that crisis, which you are already living, the droughts, the floods, the malaria. You know, I just blogged about this, and the headline I put on is climate structural adjustment, because this is what the International Monetary Fund was so famous for doing. You need help. Your country is collapsing. Here's our list of demands. Privatize your water. Lay off your people. But this is on a massive, massive scale. So, yeah, I would call it blackmail. And I think that, unfortunately, countries are so desperate for aid that they may well accept this terrible deal. And those are the stakes here.
Jade.
Yeah, it's interesting because Hillary Clinton is saying that this money will be for the most vulnerable and the poorest countries, and EU has the same strategy. They want to help Africa. And it's a way of choosing which country you want to help. And this thing is not equal. I mean, China is a competitor to the U.S. economy, but China has a lot of poor people living within its borders. And the way the rich countries are in the way of picking who they want to help is a bit disgusting.
It also makes the blackmail more effective, because if it isn't, if it's completely arbitrary, if it's really up to the U.S. who they decide to help, then countries realize that if they stand up to the U.S. in these negotiations, they won't get the money. So one of the questions that Secretary Clinton received was, what mechanism will there be in order to decide who gets this $100 billion? And let's remember, it's not the U.S. giving $100 million. It's all the countries combined, $100 billion, by 2020. And it's not clear whether it's going to be already pledged funds and so on. But leaving aside the questions of whether this is a bit of a shell game in terms of where the money is coming from, developing countries have been very clear that they want to have a say in how the money is allocated, that there has to be a genuinely democratic mechanism. When this question was put to Hillary Clinton, she said that they hadn't figured that out yet, and that's why this is really about blackmail. It's really about sign to our deal or you won't get the money, so countries realize that they could lose a lot.
Let's talk about civil society for a minute. Naomi, you walked out along with more than 100 other people yesterday from the talks here. That group joined thousands of people outside. I was just saying earlier, the only thing worse than these incredibly long lines that have been here for the last week and a half are no lines, and that's today.
Yes.
The place is, well, not exactly empty, but close. Why'd you walk out?
I thought that the symbolism of civil society, and I think there were hundreds of people who walked out, really turning their back on this process that, as Jad has just broken here on this story, on this news program, it has failed. I mean, even if they get a deal, according to these figures, they can't call that a success, because the science tells us that that's a catastrophe. 3 degrees is a catastrophe. So people symbolically turn their backs on this process, and I thought that was very, very significant. But to me, what the image that will stick with me—I know you had this on the show yesterday—is Nimmo Basai being refused entry. This is a man who has devoted his life to fighting the oil companies that are devastating the Niger Delta, a close friend of Ken Saro-Wiwa. He's been imprisoned himself for his activism, and he has physically been kept out of this center, even though he's accredited. And meanwhile, the oil executives are walking free in the hallways. It's the world upside down in the Bella Center.
The leaders of the climate justice movement, a number of them have been arrested from all different sectors, like Tajo Mueller. You knew him well.
I think Jad has been following this.
Yeah, he's been arrested, with according to a new Danish law that allows the police to arrest people before they actually do something that could be condemned by the state.
A kind of pre-crime.
Yeah, like a pre-crime, like, I don't know, the science fiction justice, in a way. So the pressure on the protesters have been very strong. A very good friend of mine was arrested yesterday during a very peaceful demonstration, and he was taken by 5 policemen and thrown into a van, and they were not dressed as policemen, so for a few seconds, he thought he was being taken out by fascist people. And, I mean, these methods, these police methods, are not acceptable. They're not democratic.
But it does feel very strange in the hallways today, because civil society is totally absent. As you said, there were no lines. And this is why I say that my horrible voice that I'm subjecting your listeners to is a metaphor for what's going on at the Bella Center, because the NGOs have totally lost their voices. And, of course, the developing countries are saying that they feel like they're in the matrix, where they think they're in reality. But actually, reality is being decided in an alternate reality in the green rooms, where the power is.
What do you mean, the green rooms?
Well, the green rooms are what they call these selective meetings, where a few powerful countries get together and strike a deal, rather than the open process of back and forth coming up with the text together. It comes down in the end to these power plays of using aid really as a weapon. And we saw that this morning with Hillary Clinton, but there's a lot that we're not seeing in terms of bilateral deals. Like, for instance, Hillary Clinton went to the Philippines just a couple of weeks ago. The Philippines had been one of the most outspoken countries demanding deep emission cuts. They had some of the most outspoken people on their negotiating team, and those people were pulled.
Naomi Klein and Jod Lingard, I want to thank you very much being with us. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by a remarkable team of people. I want to thank Shroof Abdulkadous and Steve Martinez and Nicole Salazar and Robbie Caron, Hani Massoud and Steve Martinez, as well as John Hamilton, Dennis Moynihan, Mike Burke, the entire Danish crew who's here with us. You can go to our website at democracynow.org. I'll be speaking Friday night here in Copenhagen. Go to our website. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us. Thank you.